The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And what I'd like to do is talk about ethics. It's at the heart of Buddhist practice, living ethical life, though there's no word in Buddhism for the word ethics, the English word ethics. So you can argue, well, maybe there's no ethics in Buddhism. There's something else that looks like ethics. So if the word ethics doesn't quite work for you. And so what I'd like to do is start. Part of it is also this integration. Many people, one of the wonderful questions people ask me, people meditate or go on retreat. They say, oh, meditation's fine, retreat's fine, but how does it apply to our life? You know, it should apply to our life, you know, just not about just sitting peacefully by yourself. Well, this topic of ethics is about how it applies to life. It's not like ethics is secondary, or it's not like it's the foundation so we can meditate. It's the fruit of meditation. It's the expression of it, the manifestation of it in our life. So that's kind of a little bit the introduction. But I thought the way I'd like to start here I'd like to, since we're a relatively small group compared to before the pandemic, we have the luxury of maybe you could all go around and say your names. And would that be okay? If you could.
My name is Beta.
I think you have to, not loud enough, I think. Is it light enough?
Does it work?
No. Yes. Yeah.
My name is Beta.
Hi, my name is Beverly, or Bev. Anne.
Laura.
My name is Sage.
Sally.
My name is Sue.
My name is Jamie.
Hi, Bill.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Anne Rose.
Hi, my name's Kristen.
Hi, I'm Malvika.
I'm Caroline.
Mike.
April.
Wonderful. And also we have some people online. It's a little hard for them to say their names, but you're all included. So that was really nice for me. It's also now a way that we're more connected. A little bit, each of you had your voice in here, and so there's more sense of being somehow in relationship or been recognized. Something about you as a human being now has been seen or recognized, and as opposed to some of you, I didn't know your names, and nameless people who come to IMC, and maybe you wouldn't speak otherwise. I wouldn't hear your voice, but there was some contact, there was some knowing, and in a sense, that's an act of mindfulness. That you know, paying attention, noticing what's here, and. But something else happens in that noticing. Now you're more, you know, maybe you'll forgive me for saying it this way, because probably not exactly to the point, or I don't know what, but you're more human. You're more yourself. There's more feeling for you. There's a easier for empathy. There's a, like now you're somebody rather than someone more amorphous or uncertain or, and now, for me, I care for you more. There's a sense of care. There's a sense of you're you have an emotional life, you have an inner life, you have a history, you have something brought you here, an interest that maybe we share. And so so that there's a deeper recognition. And I'm touched in some way. It's not, I'm sure I can be much more deeply touched if you told me a little bit more about your life. But I feel a little bit touched too. Something moves inside of me that's different. All of that changes how I'd like to live with you, in a sense. I'm much less inclined to want to hurt you, to harm you. More importantly, I'm much more interested in to have care for you and be concerned for you. I'm much more ready to notice that if I have some kind of harsh or mean or angry, kind of hostile kind of thoughts, that I've noticed that when I hit that, it hurts me. That it isn't just that, why would I do that to you now that I know you? But also if I do it, I'm now going to be a little bit I'm hurting myself. I'm kind of diminishing myself, undermining myself. And that's the movement of what I'm calling ethics. This is how ethics can come out of Buddhism, because of this practice or mindfulness, because we're paying attention more, we're connecting more, we're people around us have a different role and place in our lives than they do if we don't know them at all. And we know ourselves more through this practice. We're much more sensitive. We recognize the quality of our thoughts, the quality of our speech, the quality of what we're trying to do, our intentions. And it isn't that it's ethical in the sense that there's a should and shouldn't way of being, but rather there's an ouch factor. It's like, oh, that hurts. Why would I do that? Why would I close myself down? And we could continue going around the room and do this, and I think the sense of connection and things would be deeper, and not only to each other, but also to ourselves. So I'd like to ask we do that, and maybe you can pass if you don't want to say anything. It's completely fine. And in fact, that's also a way of knowing you in a nice way. It's a kind of expression of who you are, and that should be respected, and it's not... there's lots of place for that. But this is the it's something very brief. It could be a phrase, no more than a sentence, not a story. But it has to do with the story. In the story of your inner growth, your caring for your inner life, your growth of wisdom, of compassion, of healing, your story of your life in terms of your inner growth, healing, spirituality, maturity. Where does meditation fit in that for you? Is that part of that story, or is it just like, it's not any difference than going home and doing this, watching the shopping channel? How does it fit? So put you on the spot, but just something, it doesn't have to be brilliant, just some little phrase or idea.
Meditation's a foundation.
Is what?
Foundation.
Foundation. Nice.
Thank you. This is the first time I've done a 45-minute sit since before the pandemic, and it was horrible.
I would say meditation is the way to slow down and get closer to attaining balance.
Nice. Could you turn it up a little?
For me, meditation is a way of bringing loving awareness to everything around me.
Deepening quiet.
Meditation brings me closer to myself and to others in my life.
It's what I do.
I would say meditation is something like the beating heart of my ethical practice. I found that my daily practice is like ironing out the wrinkles.
I like the freedom of finding here.
Meditation has allowed me to just become more aware of the treasure of each day.
Today, what I'm thinking about is meditation gives me the awareness of what's happening in my mind, so I have more choice about how I respond to that.
I don't know whether it's the meditation sitting or meditation in daily life, but I'm more aware of what's going on in my body and what that's doing to my mind, or vice versa, maybe more vice versa.
Meditation's had a changing role in my life, and it's becoming more and more foundational these days.
Meditation is a place of rest for me, and it's how I find myself.
Nice. Very nice, thank you. So that was lovely to hear as well. And from hearing all that for myself, I hear a sensitivity in each of you that probably would make you more ethical if you stayed close to it. If you stay close to what you described, that probably you're not going to go jump up out up sitting here and yell at me for wearing the wrong color shirt. You know, like, how could you? A Dharma teacher shouldn't wear blue. Or something, you know. I'm just making something silly up, but you're probably more likely to make some space, I felt, you know, to listen or be a present and come out of that somewhat more caring for each other. You could do a different activity tonight and would come out of that activity the opposite. What you choose to do has a big impact on the tendencies of the mind and what we want to do. And so coming to meditate and engage in the Dharma in some kind of way changes us in the direction of wanting to be more kind, wanting to be more connected or more sensitive to ourselves and to others. The quiet that some of you discussed is something that makes us more available to feel and sense what's going on here. And it makes a difference what we do. And so one of the things that comes out of that is this very, I think, important recognition that we don't want to harm anyone because that harms them. Why would you? Also, you don't want to harm yourself. One of the reasons not to harm yourself is that that's a way to create the conditions to remove the foundation that's important to have. That would make you a kind, supportive, caring person. People who are very critical of themselves and living under that kind of stress are much more likely to snap and get angry or be shut down or insensitive to the world around them. And so as we practice, there's a tendency to become more sensitive to ourselves, the impact we have, the impact we have on others, the impact we have on ourselves. And as that becomes more sensitive, then people will naturally want to live a little bit more ethically, which in my vocabulary means a life that avoids causing harm. In fact, the very idea that we would harm someone, intentionally or unintentionally, it just feels completely like, no, that I don't want to do that. There becomes a more and more a life of living for the benefit of others, for their care, not because it's a should, not because that's what Buddhists do and you're a Buddhist, so now you've got to figure out how to be kind. But it arises out of this mindfulness, out of this practice, out of this the deeper connection we have to ourselves and the world around us. So that's one of the reasons why, the connection to ethics and the integration of mindfulness into daily life is inherent in what we're doing. However, it's easy to overlook it. It's easy to get distracted and busy. It's easy to not appreciate fully that this is happening. So then we give Dharma talks, or we study Buddhism, and they say, you know, it's good to live by the precepts, it's good to be ethical, and be kind, and be compassionate, and here are some ways of developing compassion, here's a practice of loving kindness. I know that the precepts are hard to practice, but they'll really create the right conditions for you, so when you do go sit and meditate, you won't feel regrets and upset about what you've done. So there's all kinds of logical ways and doctrinal ways that we can get the instructions to be ethical. Sometimes those can put people in the wrong direction. I've seen people try to be ethical, and they get all tight, and they become judgmental of other people. But I've also seen that people get inspired at some point to want to learn about how to be ethical, to learn to study about it, to think about it, to reflect on it, to do practices connected to ethics, because they value that ethical sensitivity growing inside of them. That this is a good direction to go. This is a way that I want this to be part of my life. And so some people then say, you know, if they say that the five precepts are what supports this, or the expression of this, and that there's a feedback loop between living by the five precepts and this beautiful thing that's happening to me, having it grow, then I'm going to live by the five precepts. And that's a very different feeling than having some kind of strict moralistic idea that to be a good person, you have to follow the precepts. It's something that's coming from the inside out now. One of the things I'm trying to say here now is that you don't have to leave it to chance. You don't have to let it this ethical sensitivity, this care, to be something that you just let arise and develop kind of naturally out of the meditation practice as it does. At some point, you can begin recognizing that you're being changed this way and want to support that, encourage it, develop it further. And then it becomes something you take on intentionally. But the motivation from it, for doing it, comes from within. The motivation is an expression of the practice that's maturing, as opposed to you read all the books on Buddhism and the manual said this is what you're supposed to do. So this is the transformation, that this is the way that this practice becomes our life. And the idea that how do I bring this practice into daily life, I feel very happy when people ask that question, and I feel a little bit sad. And the sad part is because it sounds to me sometimes as if there's two things, their practice and their life. And as long as there's these two things, then there can be a challenge, or, you know, then, you know, sometimes have it, sometimes don't, you don't. But to really feel it, there's not two things, it's your life we're talking about. It's how you live your life, how you experience your life, how you inhabit your life that we're talking about. And so it's not so much, so a lovely way of talking about this is that you don't bring your practice into your life, you bring your life into your practice. And why that's a wonderful turn of phrase is that if you bring your practice into your life, it might, for some people, prioritize life. You have to live your life and do what you're doing, and then you bring in the practice to it. And that's certainly a valid way of seeing. But to say, how do I bring my life into my practice, puts the practice at the center. Like, that's the most important thing. And, you know, where I go shopping and how I drive my car, those are all, that is my life. But the practice is more centrally in my life, because the practice is what I'm discovering is this deeper sensitivity, this deeper sense of foundation, this deeper place of quiet, of peace, of compassion, of care. This is where I want my life to be based on. That's portable. Sometimes I'm driving my car, sometimes I'm shopping, sometimes I'm doing whatever, having breakfast. And rather than prioritizing that, prioritize this place of practice as if that is who you are, that's life. And then see how everything fits into that, rather than how your practice fits into your life. And because then you're always, and practice is always kind of the forefront. Some people who don't know about this inner change that happens can feel like now you're just being told to get more busy, to add something on top of your life. Now I got to do all this practice on top of the dishes and making breakfast and all that. It's actually, in some ways, you get to do less, because the practice becomes who you are, not what you do. And that's the direction that where this integration or this how this practice becomes more and more ethical. When the practice becomes you, you become the practice. It's not something that's apart from you. You don't have to come to IMC to do the practice. At some point, you carry it with you. It's kind of the nature of your heart. It's who you are. The ancient language, they talk about this in the terms of entering a stream. At some point, you enter the literal meaning of this word is not stream, but entering the current of a river. And if you find the current, it'll carry you along. And then when the Buddha is also asking, what is the current we enter into? And it's the Eightfold Path that we have become. So the eight practices that are the Eightfold Path are not meant to be something you're adding to your life, but something arises out of your life. So the challenge I'd like to offer each of you, if you're up for a little challenge, is what is it about this practice that we do, the meditation practice, the Dharma practice, that flows out of you, that when it flows out of you, looks like you're now an ethical person, you're living an ethical life. What is it? Can you identify something? Have you recognized something in you? What is it that flows from you that maybe sometimes gets forgotten, gets overridden because of the busyness of life? But what is it that flows out of you? And if you're willing to do one more round, I'd love to hear some of you. Again, you can more than welcome to pass, because this is a little more difficult question to answer. But if some of you would like to offer some words about what is it that flows out of you that would someone else would look at you and say, oh, that person is inclined towards to be ethical. But you're not ethical because you're not thinking in those terms. You're thinking about just how to let the sensitivity be expressed in your life. Does that make some sense, what I'm asking? Yeah, good enough?
I have two things that come to my mind. I started trusting my kids.
To start trusting?
My kids.
My fears.
No, my kids. I really trust them. Yeah. You know, this is a big change, and I conserve water. I think about it all the time, and I really focus on this.
Nice, nice.
No specifics came up, but just an attitude that I recognize that's changed is just coming from a non-harm perspective, as opposed to maybe more of a protect myself or something kind of a perspective.
I'm not really sure. I would say maybe caring, being more caring of others, but I'm not sure I'd answer your question.
I think I would say something like tenderness. It's become more and more a part of my life, and I think that comes from meditation and the recognition that, like, you know, all beings are sacred and important.
For me, acceptance, like, of myself, of other people, of things that are happening in the world. Yeah.
I think right mindset for me, because thinking critically of myself and others and being very anxious has always been something I've struggled with, which, you know, putting the practice into my life has allowed me to kind of influence how my actions affect myself and others.
I think equanimity really helps as onward leading. Yes.
I have a little less tendency to be angry at people, and I understand my anger more when I have it.
Love.
I guess more acceptance of myself, and also when I see somebody really struggling, I find myself having a respect for them as a person and care and concern, which is a different place than I have been in the past.
Say care, and the more I'm in the present, the more I have the ability to be attentive for others, which I work towards.
What came up for me was gratitude and reverence. When I feel that spring up, I'm more likely to not hurt others.
I'd say compassion and connection, just seeing myself in them and them in me.
Meditation has helped me recognize when I'm angry, to not get triggered and to see that I'm angry and to observe it and not react so much. And like one of my girlfriends said, I don't understand why you're not just jumping up and, you know, defending yourself. And I didn't have an answer at the time, but I think that's why.
Where I work, you know, sometimes hear people say it's better to seek forgiveness than permission. And I turn that around. I'd much rather ask for permission than, you know, get it cleared up front.
Very nice. Thank you all. So I hope that the theme of today, the connection of this practice with ethics, or something that looks like that, you know, somehow addressed in a nice way and inspired something in you or touched something in you. I don't have much more to say today. Do you have anything you want to say or any questions or comments? There, April, use the mic, please.
A colleague of mine was on the ethics committee, and I asked him, because I've always wondered, what's the difference between ethics and morals? I don't know if you have an opinion about that.
Oh, ethics and morals. I think that's probably a very individual thing, how people would answer that, that the difference between them is kind of like, you know, some people would say they're synonyms. I'm sure there's people who will have definitions that are different. I think that morals, I associate more with guidelines by which people live. And ethic is an abstraction. It's more like, almost like philosophy of ethics. It's the wide field of how people might make decisions, how to live their life. And so morals are closer to the heart. Ethics is more, can be more abstract. Though I never use the word morals. I use the word ethics in English. So that's the best I could come up with. As I said, there's no clear word in the Buddhist language about that matches our word ethics. Though many people say it's the word sila or shila. But the sila, that word literally means a conduct. And it refers to kind of, some people now translate it as virtuous conduct, ethical conduct. But usually we think of ethics in English as something deeper in us than only what we do. It's also the source within us for how we do it. And so the word that's a better fit for the English word ethics is kusala, a word that can mean both wholesome, which I like as a wholesome word, and also has the meaning of, has three meanings. It can mean virtuous, and it can mean skillful. To do something skillfully with some, so this ability to do something with skill that is for the benefit of self and others. And what's repeated often in the teachings of the Buddha is live a life that's for the benefit of oneself, benefit for others, and a benefit for self and others. And I love that last one, self and others, because we don't know what the Buddha meant, but how I interpret it is that it's the we. It's us in community. And so it's not just the ethics of individuals, how it is for me or the impact I have on you, but it's also the impact it has for us as a community, in relationship to each other. And so we want to care for that relationship as well. And so the carefulness is in how do we have a relationship that is friendly, that's warm, that's connected, that's supportive, that's carries some of these values in the relationship itself. And so so this so-called ethics is in Buddhism is very relational as well. So I love that it's all of us in it together. So thank you for being together here today. I really appreciate it a lot that we could come here and meditate and that you participated with me rather than giving a classic traditional kind of Dharma talk, but to hear from you and do this together. And so thank you very, very much, and I wish you well.